America's financial bailout of Argentina has helped China source more soybeans from South America. Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Today we talk tariffs and trade. President Donald Trump declared Liberation Day in April. He said sweeping new tariffs would launch a new chapter in U.S. economic history. Now, months later, the U.S. Supreme Court is considering the legality of the Trump tariffs. Meanwhile, an economic crisis in Argentina has the administration authorizing billions of dollars in financial support for that struggling economy. South Dakota farmers are feeling the impact of all of this. Everett Vandersloos is a professor of economics at South Dakota State University.
Well, from an economic perspective, we have these there are these two traditional reasons for why a country might want to impose a tariff. And one is to that's a legitimate thing, and that has been done for through the ages, is to raise government revenue. So basically, it's a tax on imports, and the buyer, the importer, essentially pays for it, and that generates revenue. And that there are still many countries in the world that do that because they find it easy to impose the tariff at the border, and it's a quick and easy way to raise the revenue so that people can provide or the governments can provide health programs and you know public services and that sort of thing. And then the other purpose is to protect domestic industry. So those were the two traditional reasons for why people would implement tariffs. But in recent times, there have been lots of other motivations, and I think the various reasons have been given, including one that says that we have a trade deficit and therefore we need to raise our tariffs so that automatically would reduce the trade deficit.
Sure.
But I think what has come to pass is that more than anything, these tariffs have been used to extract concessions from other countries. And there's different terms and phrases for that, but basically to threaten another country with a high tariff, and then you sit down and negotiate with them, and then you make the country do what you want them to do. And then you lower your own tariffs in the process. So it's been used in that way more, I think, than for any other reason, and that's why we have seen these tariffs go up and down so much.
Yeah.
Where when the government announces a tariff of 50%, the next thing you know, the tariff is half of that, and then it goes up again and back on and off that type of thing.
Yeah, it can be a little hard to track. I talked to a small business owner the other day, and she said everything has been affected by it that she's bringing into her store. But it was hard to determine where something was a tariff and where something was, the price had gone up. My point is, how hard is it to track these things? When they're implemented, who they impact, what the revenue is, difficult or?
It's incredibly hard,
okay.
I think, especially if we have different tariffs for different products and all of these products are, you know, they're being categorized in a certain way. They're all products that are being traded across countries, across borders. They're associated with a certain, within a certain category. Mm-hmm. And then one thing you see is that if the tariff is really high on one product, businesses will try to make it look as if it's another product, and mm-hmm. to circumvent tariffs. So that's a game that is being played. It's expensive and time-consuming to do the paperwork for that kind of thing. So,
sure.
So there's a lot of wasted energy going in those type of efforts also. But in general, I think it's the uncertainty all of this has created that makes it very difficult for businesses to make long-term investments.
Mm.
And that is even more important than the tariffs themselves. You know, yes, we see we hear about these tariffs going up and down, and we don't know next morning if we get out of bed whether what really is the level of the tariff. But it's that very uncertainty, that up and down, that is creating this world that is unstable, and that makes it really difficult for businesses to make any decisions based on any of that.
So it seems like the logical thing would be like to rethink your supply chains in any way possible to get as much American manufactured goods as possible. But that might be more expensive than this international supply chain between Canada and the U.S., for example. If a new president comes in, that could all change again, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's if you tell a manufacturer, why don't you just figure out how to make it in America? It's not quite as simple as that.
Right. And so ideally, we would have some continuity between elected officials, right? That's the idea.
So one of the impacts that we're seeing is uncertainty right now, and that is impacting long-term investment. Are there other impacts that you're seeing immediately or at this point in the year?
Well, there's a very interesting case right now with Argentina. Maybe I would like to kind of focus on that a little bit.
Please, yeah.
That one is, you know, something that we have been hearing about is, if Argentina is enabled to produce more beef, that competes with our beef. And that's certainly true, and that's part of this. But again, we have to understand that Argentina's beef production is a lot smaller than the United States, and that's only production. So they would only export a part of that. So I looked up some numbers, and I found that Argentina's annual beef production is a little over 3 million metric tons in terms of carcass weight. And so compare that to that of the United States, it's about four times as big as a little over 12 million metric tons. So Argentina's is about a quarter of the size of the United States. And of course, that's the total production. They wouldn't export all of that. But a related issue with that is something that we haven't really heard all that much about, I think. And that is related to soybean trade. And that is, you know, we hear about the $10 billion bailout for Argentina, and that may actually increase. And we found that, or what has been reported in the press, is that Argentina, in response to that, eliminated its export tax on grain products. And then China almost immediately bought over 1 million tons of Argentine soybeans. And that kind of illustrates that, you know, these temporary shocks, they can make changes in the structure of these supply chains. And we have to realize, you know, soybeans are intermediate goods. They're not a final goods. So if we impose a tariff on a final good like shoes or coats and those types of products or food itself, mm-hmm. then it may not be easy to find another supply chain, to find an alternative source. But in the case of soybeans, it's quite easy, and we have seen that. The United States imposed tariffs, and China retaliated and imposed tariffs on the United States, which deeply affected soybeans, but also other products. And then China, in response, of course, was trying to see where else it might be able to source these soybeans, and of course it has gone to South America, Argentina and Brazil, and that's something that we have seen now. It's interesting to put that in context. China is so big; they import 100 million tons of soybeans every year or thereabouts, and that, so totally they make up about 60% of the global soybean trade. And big buyers like China, they can decide whether they buy their products from one country versus the other one. Once that system switches over from one supplier to the other, in the case, you know, from the United States to Argentina and Brazil, then that switch may be permanent to some degree. That may not easily go back. And that's something that I think that a lot of soybean producers might be very concerned about. And that isn't something that happened just recently. This happened at around 2018, but it even started before that time when in 2004, when China got caught in, there were some really big soybean price fluctuations. And a lot of their processors went bankrupt, their crush plants. And they lost a lot of money, and they lost control over their supply chains. But some of their state-owned operations, they continued. And so these same state-owned operations, you know, China learned a lesson. And they said, we're no longer going to do this, and we're going to make sure that we have access to the amount, to the soybeans that we want. And in response, they invested in South America. and we are now faced. It's part of that history that we are that we are trying to learn from, I think.
So the $10 billion bailout from the U.S. to Argentina, is that helping China get soybeans from Argentina? Do I understand this correctly?
So the $10 billion that Argentina received enabled it to lower its export tax. Argentina on and off has imposed an export tax, and it does so at times when it really needs the money, some revenue. The United States, officially, it's by the Constitution, it's illegal to impose an export tax, but some other countries can do that. And Argentina is kind of famous for that, for doing that off and on. And so they put a tax on the exports of soybeans and other grains, or grains in general. And so because they got this this extra money, these extra $10 billion, there was no need for them to impose that export tax any longer. And so that make their soybeans more competitive in world markets. And immediately China was able to take advantage of that or utilize that and buy Argentine soybeans at lower prices than they would have had to had these taxes, these export taxes still been in place. So that's how that worked out.
So help me understand how that impacts the American soybean farmer, not only now, but in the future, and for how long?
So it means that, you know, if China is in need of having to buy soybeans, and they can source it from another country, in this case, Argentina, then those additional soybeans that they buy from Argentina, they don't need to buy from the United States. Yeah. So that puts extra pressure on U.S. soybean producers.
How much pressure does the beef deal put on American beef producers?
I'm not a meat ag economist type of person, but what I read is that it's not thought that the thinking is not that there's going to be a huge big impact on this, but it doesn't politically, it doesn't look very friendly to beef producers, of course. I think that's the bigger issue. It's more of a political mistake, so to speak, than from where I sit, at least, than it is an economic. It may not be a huge economic driver. You know, we already import a lot of beef, but we also export beef. You know, that like low quality beef is being imported for hamburger and from countries like Australia and other places.
So, help me understand, and this is a little political, but are South Dakota or American soybean farmers being asked to make a sacrifice, you know, a short-term sacrifice for a long-term political gain, like getting back to this idea that there's a trade deficit and it needs to be evened out and it needs to be fairer. And if you can hold on right now, this is going to be better long-term. Because it's not sounding like that to me. It's sounding like this is just increased pressure and increased pressure on South Dakota soybean farmers.
Well, it tends to be the case, and it has historically been like this. You know, if you look at which products do we export, well, one of the main products that we export is coming from the agricultural sector. So soybeans is a big export commodity. So when the United States was imposing these tariffs on China, then China was doing the calculation and looking at, you know, what can we do so that it hurts the United States in some tender spots? And and so an obvious spot we would be in the area of agriculture. And they could freely do that because they had already done these investments in South America in infrastructure so that, you know, it used to be the case that Brazil had a tough time to get their soybeans to their harbors and ship it elsewhere, but that's no longer the case. And the same is to some extent true in Argentina. And then they've been building ports on the Pacific side that allows them to ship products directly first over land and then by sea directly to China. And so they were in a position that they were able to do that. And the soybean producers got caught in that game.
There is a Supreme Court challenge and a lot of questions about whether the president can legally do some of the things with tariffs that he is doing or whether that's the role of Congress. Does that decision matter to soybean farmers?
You know, frankly, I don't know about that. It's my understanding that if they're not able to use that legal avenue, then there's alternative routes to raise tariffs also. Yeah. But that, of course, would take time.
Yeah. Are there other concerns that you have? Because you mentioned China learning a lesson in 2004, and I'm wondering what the lessons that the United States is learning right now about tariff policies that we might want to be filing or developing for the future.
That's a very good question, and I've been thinking about that. I think one of the issues here is that, you know, the complex supply chains, they can adapt to the disruption, and tariffs can protect final goods industries, but they can also be disasters. There's disasters for intermediate goods, and a product like soybeans is. Yes, it is true that, you know, some people use it for direct consumption almost, but it's pretty much a raw commodity or an intermediate good at best. And so because we have flexible supply chains, countries can switch to different sources of where they buy that. So that's something that we should be aware of. The other thing is trade is inherently multilateral and not bilateral, in the sense that, you know, we thought we could pick a fight with China, but of course China finds other avenues to route their products through, and to some degree we have overestimated our own indispensability and underestimated the adjustment cost to that. And this is comparable to what happened with Brexit. You know, when Britain left the European Union, they found that it was highly disruptive, and these disruptions, they still take place. It's not like you move away from this economic unit and then everything is fine afterwards. There's a lot of different supply chains that have to be developed, and these relationships take time to build.
Yeah. What are the opportunities for new relationships for South Dakota farmers?
I think it takes time to build that, and hard work. It takes time to, you know, travel to other places and talk with somebody across the table and finding ways to strike deals with people, and that it's all based on trust and human interaction.
Yeah. Everett Vandersloos is a professor of economics at South Dakota State University. We connected via SDPB's Janine Basinger studio on the campus at SDSU. That's our conversation for today. We hope that it served you. If trade policy and tariffs are impacting your business or operation, send me an email, inthemoment@sdpb.org. I'd love to hear your story. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.